What is the most important e-discovery issue today?
Cost control?
Technology-assisted review?
Information management?
Preservation?
From the latest cases to the newest technologies.
Our goal is to expose legal professionals to the most important e-discovery trends
with the brightest e-discovery experts.
Rulemaking,
predictive coding,
litigation hold,
proportionality,
document review,
social media,
efficiency,
ethics,
cooperation. Welcome to the ESI Report, sponsored by Kroll On Track, an e-discovery software and service provider. You are listening to the Legal Talk Network.
Hi, I'm Michelle Lang, and welcome to another edition of the ESI Report. 2013 was an interesting year for e-discovery. While there were few landmark cases on par with the De Silva Moore opinion from 2012, many opinions went back to the basics with a renewed interest in applying fundamental discovery principles, such as proportionality and cooperation. Other notable opinions highlighted some unsettled areas of the law that will play prominent roles in 2014, especially as efforts to amend the federal rules of civil procedure progress. Joining me to discuss the year in review is Phil Favreau, a recognized expert in e-discovery, information governance, and data protection. Phil has advised technology companies and other enterprises regarding complex business disputes. He is also an accomplished writer with over 50 bylines and 4 law review articles published in reputable publications such as the ACC Docket, Law Technology News, and the Michigan State Law Review. Hi, Phil. It's an honor to have you joining me today. I'm so excited.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I'm delighted to be on and looking forward to our program today.
So, Phil, 2013 was a whirlwind for e-discovery, but before we dig into the nitty-gritty of the details, could you give listeners sort of a headline for what was the biggest developments in 2013? If you had to summarize 2013 in one or two newsworthy sentences, what would you write?
I would say that preservation standards, though they remain a moving target for litigants, there is hope for seeing a uniform national standard addressing sanctions for the deletion of information with this new proposed revision to Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 37E. That, is, I would say, is the big headline, because sanctions continue to be the big boogeyman in the courtroom for companies that are trying to address e-discovery.
Well, I think you definitely nailed it in that headline. You talked about preservation, sanctions. You talked about the FRCP rules. Do you want to dig in on just two or three of the biggest hot topics in e-discovery in 2013?
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. And let me add one other as well, and that's search methodologies. I'd say those federal rules amendments, that's a big issue. I would say preservation and sanctions is another, as it is every year. And last but not least would be these issues of search methodologies, and in particular, predictive coding. And I'm going to start with that last topic first, if you don't mind. In particular, I would say that we're seeing more and more widespread acceptance of predictive coding, machine learning technology used in the legal space. Michelle, you and I know it's been around since the late 40s, machine learning technology in other industries. It's new to our industry. And so it seems, it has seemed for quite some time as a type of a technology that may be risky or that is unknown, so it's not accepted. But we're getting beyond that trepidation. And I would say at this point, parties should not have trepidation about using the right tools to perform predictive coding type work.
Were there any cases in 2013 that particularly stood out, maybe not to the level of De Silva Moore, but any cases that were notable on the topic of predictive coding in 2013?
Well, sure. There's the Biomet case. And I would say that most people have heard about the Biomet case. And as I understand it, you yourself have gone into the details of what Biomet stands for, what it doesn't stand for. So I don't want to cover ground that you have well covered. But I think it's important to juxtapose Biomet and these other predictive coding cases against some other decisions. And in particular, I would say that the decisions involving Apple versus Samsung and DuPont versus Kolin Industries with respect to search terms are instructive for purposes of our discussion today. And without getting into too many details so we don't bore our listeners to tears, in these cases, Apple versus Samsung and DuPont versus Cullen Industries, in each of those instances in 2013, you had a court approving either tacitly or implicitly on the one hand or explicitly on the other the use of keyword searches to go through and analyze a particular universe of relevant information. And what this tells me, Michelle, is that while predictive coding is accepted and it is now and the future of technologies, machine learning technology is now in the future of what we want to see happen to expedite and keep the discovery cost down, we're also seeing still the continued use and acceptance of keywords. There was a recent article within the past week that was published indicating that keywords will continue to be in the mix, of course, because they're used with predictive coding technologies. Of course, the instance that I'm talking about is that keywords being used by themselves. I think we'll continue to see that happening in 2014, but as we see predictive coding increase, I think little by little, 2014, 2015, and beyond, we'll see the use of keyword searches by themselves, isolated keyword searches, begin to fall little by little. But I don't think we'll see them eradicated completely for many, many years in that context.
I think you're right. I think that the keyword search is kind of like a security blanket. It's something that feels warm and fuzzy and we know it, and it's not something we're willing to separate ourselves from so quickly. However, predictive coding is certainly enticing. Let's move on a little bit and talk about preservation and spoliation. You mentioned this in the sort of your recap headline, and we've talked on this show before in depth about the SecuSUI case, but perhaps you want to give us just a little bit of an overview of the hotly contested topics around preservation in 2013.
Well, so the hotly contested topics, Michelle, are whether a party needs to be perfect in its discovery efforts. We hear all the time that discovery should be reasonable. It involves a diligent search and a reasonable inquiry. We remember all the comments around Rule 37E in 2006 when those amendments were put into place, right? There should be a safety net. The parties shouldn't be required to be perfect in their collection efforts or their preservation efforts. And all that is a lot of mantra, but maybe not a lot of substance if you get in front of the wrong judge. Some judges, it seems like, demand or exact a perfection standard when that is not the case. But unfortunately, that's what it seems like at times. And what we've seen here, like with the SecuSUI case, we're seeing that a party that clearly didn't meet the standard of perfection, they did lose a lot of data, though Judge Moss found that that data loss wasn't consequential enough to arise to sanctions. His more senior colleague, and I say senior because she is an Article III judge, Judge Shedlin, found that it was consequential and issued sanctions. Juxtapose the SecuSUI case on the one hand with the Research Foundation versus Nectar case from Albany Federal Court in New York, that's the Northern District of New York, on the other hand. And in that case, you have a court saying, look, we aren't going to issue sanctions against a party that had some e-discovery shortcomings. Again, that's the court's word, shortcomings. They weren't perfect in the process, but they did a decent job. We're not going to see this case decided on an e-discovery sideshow instead of on the merits. Your request for doomsday sanctions, defendant, against the plaintiff is denied. So this is a good example of this moving target. How much should you preserve? How much shouldn't you preserve? What do you have to do to make sure that you fall within the ambit of safety, the so-called safe harbor? And that, of course, leads into why there are rules amendments, which we'll get into in just a few minutes.
Well, it's a perfect transition, Phil, to talk about the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure and the call for a uniform national standard. Perhaps you could give us a little bit of as to why 2013 was a big step forward in the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure amendment process and what's ahead on the horizon for 2014.
Well, so it was a big step forward because we finally got a draft. For years, we've been talking about conceptually, what could the amendments look like? Well, they could look like this. They could look like that. They're not workable because we can't have these type of bright line rules in discovery, which is such a factually intensive exercise, right? We've been going through that for years and years and years. Well, finally, we saw the advisory committee put pen to paper, if you will, and develop a draft of what the rules could look like. Now, 2013 is also a landmark because that draft is now available for public comment, right? Anybody can go in to the advisory committee's website and put their 2 cents worth on what the rules should or should not look like. They can even testify about it in person in Phoenix next month and in Dallas later in the month about, again, what these rules should look like and why. The public comment period closes on February 15th of 2014. And after that, what are the rules going to look like is anybody's guess. The rules makers have asked for this public comment, and they are likely going to go back and have a period of reflection and consider whether or not they should make further changes to the draft amendments, whether there's going to be another public comment period, or whether they will simply begin to wind their way through approvals channels through the Federal Judicial Conference before they make their way to the Supreme Court and to Congress for their final approval. And if, Michelle, we actually get to those 2 steps, and that's still a big if, the earliest implementation date would be December 1st of 2015. So we're still talking 2 years away before the actual rules could be enacted at their very earliest date.
You know, other than the new federal rules of civil procedure, Phil, what do you think will dominate the e-discovery headlines for 2014? Do you think that we'll continue to talk about kind of the back to the basics topics such as preservation and spoliation and sanctions and costs? Or do you think that a very attractive predictive coding case perhaps will come on the scene like we saw in 2012 with the Silva Moore?
I think you're going to see a lot of the former. I think you're going to see a lot of back to basics issues. And this is something that, of course, that your company has discussed frequently, and they have a lot of data out there to support what's going on in the back to basics. I think you're going to see the back to basics continue, but it's going to continue in a different realm. We're going to continue to see how these issues are being pushed by new and disruptive technologies, by mobile devices, by apps that are on these mobile devices, by the way these devices are used, whether they are corporate-owned, personally-enabled devices, so-called COPE devices, where the employer actually issues to the employee a device, and the employee uses those devices in a manner that brings scrutiny from the courts to a particular company. Or is it going to be a personally enabled device, a personal device under a bring-your-own-device policy that causes problems? It's going to be each. And those mobile devices are going to create more and more headaches for companies. And they're going to be trying to address these very basic issues in a very new and complex arena. And their ability to handle those devices through intelligent policies, through effective enabling technologies, and through training their employees is going to probably mark a difference between data security, data privacy, and e-discovery headaches on the one hand, and on the other hand, having efficient and cost-effective practices that keep them out of trouble.
I think you're right, Phil. I think that we're going to have plenty to talk about in 2014 when it comes to e-discovery. Phil Favreau, thank you so much for joining me on the ESI Report today.
You're welcome, and thanks for having me very much.
Phil, I know you're active on Twitter, so let me give out your Twitter handle in case anyone wants to follow you. You're at Philip Favreau on Twitter, and I know that you have some very interesting tweets that you push out every day, so I'd encourage folks to keep an eye on you there.
Thank you for that plug.
And thanks to everyone who joined me on the ESI Report today. This was another edition of the ESI Report on the Legal Talk Network, sponsored by Kroll On Track. For more information on the year-in-review e-discovery case law research that Kroll On Track conducts every year, make sure to check out theediscoveryblog.com. That's theediscoveryblog.com by Kroll On Track, and you'll be able to find some interesting commentary and infographics about all the e-discovery cases from 2013. With that, until next time, I'm Michelle Lang saying thanks for listening to the ESI Report.
This was another edition of the ESI Report, sponsored by Kroll On Track. Be sure to follow Kroll On Track on Facebook and Twitter, or learn more about Kroll On Track's software and services at www.krolontrack.com. Thanks for listening to the ESI Report, produced by the broadcast professionals at Legal Talk Network. Join Michelle Lang for her next podcast on the latest e-discovery trends. Subscribe to the RSS feed on LegalTalkNetwork.com or in iTunes. The views expressed by the participants of this program are their own and do not represent the views of, nor are they endorsed by, Legal Talk Network, its officers, directors, employees, agents, representatives, shareholders, and subsidiaries. None of the content should be considered legal advice. As always, consult a lawyer.